640 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago a day after a judge told Texas to remove a buoy barrier from the Rio Grande designed to keep migrants from crossing. There's another development. A U.S. appeals court has granted a temporary stay, allowing Texas to keep the buoys in place as court proceedings move forward. Former Trump White House advisor Peter Navarro is convicted of criminal contempt of Congress after failing to respond to subpoenas issued by the January 6th House Select Committee. According to CBS News legal contributor Jessica Levinson.
The defense put on a very thin case, and what they argued is that this could be inadvertent, that this might be a mistake that Peter Navarro did not comply.
Danny Masterson, who appeared on TV's That 70s Show, has been sentenced to 30 years to life in prison for drugging and raping two women 20 years ago. CBS's Carter Evans has more from Los Angeles.
The Church of Scientology denies that it harassed the victims or prevented them from reporting the assaults. Masterson's attorneys plan to appeal the verdict, but for now, the actor won't be eligible for parole until he's 77 years old.
The heat in the Northeast and the South has been a challenge for schools without air conditioning. In Rhode Island, some schools canceled classes today. Others had early dismissal. Mixed reactions from parents in Providence.
I think it's a little crazy. We all went to school when we were younger, whether it was snow, heat, we all survived.
I'm happy with the decision. I thought it was way too hot, and she's been coming home complaining, so I think it was a smart decision.
Meantime, Hurricane Lee is a Category 4 storm that could become the first Cat 5 of the Atlantic season, headed near the Northeast Caribbean. And as Odyssey New York meteorologist Craig Allen points out,
it is going to send out huge swells that will be affecting these Caribbean islands over the next couple of days. And so the ocean is going to be extremely rough.
It is now 1 week since convicted killer Danilo Cavalcante scaled a wall, climbed over razor wire, and jumped from a roof to escape from the Chester County, Pennsylvania jail. State Police Lieutenant Colonel George Bivens says earlier today there was a possible sighting, but no capture yet.
Cavalcante has clearly already obtained some clothing and other unknown supplies, and we want to minimize any opportunity that he might have to get anything more. It is very important we keep the pressure on him as we continue this hunt.
Britain's King Charles tomorrow will honor the first anniversary of the death of his mother, Queen Elizabeth, by spending the day at Balmoral Castle, the late monarch's Scottish summer home, and starting 10 days of national mourning. Severe flooding in Greece leaves at least six dead and six missing and villages cut off. This is CBS News.
You need to hire fast and hire right? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
With the news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Waukesha's water transition has begun. The city has started the process of switching to Lake Michigan water, with noticeable changes for homeowners and businesses expected next week. The Waukesha water bill will be going up, with the average homeowner projected to pay an extra $52 a month by 2027. The switch for homeowners and businesses is scheduled to happen between September 14th and 18th. Demo work on the Horizon West condos could start October 1st. The Waukesha Common Council this week approved a bid of $837,000 for the demolition of the building. The teardown follows a settlement between the city and the Horizon West Condominium Homes Association. AAA has the cost of gas in Waukesha and Milwaukee counties today at around $3.55 a gallon. It's about 10 cents cheaper than it is further south in Kenosha County. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media. Civic Media radio station. Saturdays and Sundays at 1, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturdays and Sundays at 1 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
I see the silhouette of Todd Alba, who still hasn't figured out that maybe a TV person could help, you know, set this whole thing up.
For whatever reason, StreamYard's video is just deciding that the room is too bright.
When has Todd Alba been accused of being too bright? I mean, really there? I'm like, where's Aaron with the rim shot?
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Low temperatures when shipped.
That is good news.
And finally, the Biden administration this week moved to impose a permanent ban on oil drilling across millions of acres of pristine Alaskan wilderness. The conservation action does not affect the controversial Willow Project due to a court judgment. In a separate announcement, Interior Secretary Deb Haaland moved to cancel all Trump-era drilling leases that had been permitted in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and restored the refuge's decades-long drilling ban.
Protections to be restored to Anwar.
Yep.
Excellent news. We'll take it. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.brandblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank-approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-866-416-7425. So a little major computer malfunction to start today's program. I think we've got everything under control thus far. So if you got a thought, question, comment, something in your mind, want to hear about it. Here's something interesting. Peter Navarro, guilty of contempt of Congress. Now it's interesting. 74-year-old Navarro, he had the one day of testimony, three prosecution witnesses, no defense witnesses. Didn't put up a defense, but he said, hey, I basically knew he was going to get convicted. He's weren't looking for the appeal. He could spend years behind bars. And what's interesting is, you know, again, this is what, you know, being a friend of what Trump gets you, maybe. This is how this works. Because according to the Washington Post, over the past week, there have been a number of sentences handed down. You had the Ricky Tarrio, 22 years. You got that Joe Biggs, 20 or 17 years. A number of other ones. But, you know, of all of the folks so far, about 700 years in jail sentences being handed down. More than 350 people have been sentenced to jail or prison time, average sentence, a little less than 2 years. And like I said from the beginning, the early sentences should have been longer. You probably would have gotten more people coming around to saying, oh, I don't know. You know, maybe turning around, testifying against others may have meant things a little bit easier. I don't know. But here's the thing. You know, Trump's got their backs. Trump has their backs, especially the new ones. I didn't help the other ones. But the new co-defendants, he's going to hold a fundraiser. Evidently planning a big candlelight dinner fundraiser with the sons there at Mar-a-Lago. He says they say they're going to try and raise between $500,000 and $1 million. But here's the thing. I think a lot of people are going to start flipping because you start seeing people trying to sever themselves in other areas. Going to be an interesting couple of days. Now, you know, for me, I've been paying attention to some of the other stuff like this John Eastman. If you saw, evidently Eastman during the disbarment hearing, evidently refused to talk about January 6th. I mean, he was asked about conversations that were had with you know, Trump and Chuck Grassley about Mike Pence. Now, one of the weird things again about January 6th, and something I think we've talked about a couple of times over the last couple of years, is
Grassley, if you remember, Grassley said, evidently told reporters that he was going to preside over, Senate debate over disputes in the 2020 election. And the quote was, well, first of all, I will be, if the vice president isn't there and we don't expect him to be there, I will be presiding over the Senate. This is the word. This is what he said. And this is what, got people freaked out because what do you know? This was the day before. This was January 5th. What do you know that you're not telling us? What's going on here, Chuck? And he's now saying, well, I was misunderstood, misquoted, whatever. But why didn't, why didn't Eastman defend himself on this? Why didn't Eastman say anything about it? Tried to bail on it. Evidently, and this again, this is another one of those moments where, somebody was expecting Mike Pence not to be there. Someone was expecting, him to be somewhere else, which is interesting because Pence refused to get into the car with the Secret Service. This is one of those weird moments where, again, I think there's a lot more that Pence isn't saying. There's a lot more there that you got to wonder. If he gets in the car with the Secret Service, where does he go? What undisclosed location does he end up in? Does he end up in a bunker somewhere? Now, of course, Eastman said that he refused to answer questions because it's client, attorney-client privilege. And he was asked who was the client, and Trump. Trump was the client. This is the thing that just drives me crazy, though, because these are supposed to be people who are patriots. These are supposed to be the people who love the country. These are supposed to be folks who are, I don't know, they wave the flag enough. They puff their chest out enough. It's one of those things where you got to ask some interesting questions. And I look at the trial. I hope that the hope gets televised. I want to find out what happened on January 6th. Because look, they've done a great job of spinning the narrative. I have some Trump supporter friends who, quite frankly, don't believe anything that they hear. I actually asked someone about this. They're like, well, there's always an excuse. That's just the liberal media. No, those were Chuck Grassley's words. You saw the reporting on it. You saw this. Pence himself saying, you stuck on that parking deck. They built a gallows. I mean, what part of this are you? No, it didn't happen. And, for me, I want to see the truth. I want to see what comes of this. Because ultimately, I got to tell you, I don't know as a country we can get past January 6th. I mean, I see it as one of those really important moments in the country's history that there needs to be absolute transparency. And what's interesting is anytime I bring something up, I get from my red hat crowd the canned responses, which are, this was the FBI's doing, it was Antifa. And my head starts to spin because I'm going, look, I didn't see any Antifa folks there. I didn't see anybody, under the Antifa flag, wearing the Antifa uniform with the Antifa membership card. I didn't see any of that. I saw a lot of people who look like me. I saw a lot of people who, well, you see at Trump rallies. I saw a lot of them. I'm waiting for the day when it's spinning, because I actually know a couple people who were there, and they're quite upfront about it. I was there. It was a patriotic thing, where it was rescuing the country, and I'm struggling with the polar opposite excuses of it was a patriotic day, nothing happened, it's all a hoax, it's all made up, it's all a sham, it's all the liberal media. And then on the other hand, we were defending the country, we were stopping the steal. And I'm going, so which is it? And this is I come back to, how do you hold two opposite views inside your head and continue to fight, can fight that? So I'm in a weird spot. I'm in a weird spot with some of this stuff, because, man, I look at what's going on in that courtroom, and I look at what's going on in places that we desperately need the truth to be shared. And I'm hoping people are paying attention. I'm hoping ultimately it's gonna come down to us seeing with our own eyes what happens. And then answering the question, do we believe in the rule of law? On either side, look, I mean, you know, because I've had people, what happens if Trump's not found guilty? That's our system. You know, the reality is our system is set up where 1,000... you know, guilty men go free as opposed to one innocent man going to jail. You know, maybe one of the guilty get away. But again, when I read the indictments, there's a lot there. And this is where, as a juror, as a citizen, as someone coming to it, you're going to have to, those people are going to be put in an interesting spot, because already what we know is there will be threats, there will be intimidation. They're already trying to taint the jury pool. Prosecutors are already saying, look, you know, he's doing all this social media stuff, which, again, as much as you may not like it, it's his right to speak publicly about this stuff. But it's our responsibility as citizens, as Americans, to believe in the system. Because, you look, don't tell me you believe in the Constitution. Don't tell me you believe in any of that stuff. The founding principles or any of that patriotic flag waving stuff. If you don't follow the rule of law, if you don't follow our system, if you're going to give Trump and his ilk a special pass, I don't know where to go from there. But I got lots to get to today. This is again another one of these these interesting moments, and of course today all you know what breaks loose, as you know my wife is off doing her thing for the weekend, so no screener today. So if you call, we'll go direct to air. My son's car breaks down, so I'm dealing with that. And of course, to start the show, you know, the computers all just, for some reason, maybe it was the Russians, I don't know. But it's been an interesting day. But we will soldier through it and move forward. It just, something has never happened before. Never had the whole system just go, we're going to take a break. That was. I've been doing this 18 years now, and I've never had that kind of everything is just going to stop. That is how my day has begun. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, want to hear it. Also, if you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, our good friend Sarah Burris is going to be here, reporter over at Raw Story, going to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. Maybe get some thoughts on the Chuck Grassley thing, because I got to tell you, I'm still worded out that Chuck Grassley, Chuck freaking get Grassley, could be eyeballs deep in this. Quick break, right back to the ground.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 2011. That was the day hundreds of ILWU strikers blocked railroad tracks near Longview, Washington. They hoped to stop grain shipments from moving in and out of the EGT grain terminal. Longshoremen had been sitting down on the tracks throughout the summer, resulting in over 100 arrests. No trains had moved in or out of the terminal since July. But then a federal judge issued an injunction against ILWU pickets. The BNSF Railroad tried to move grain once again. ILWU picketers in Vancouver were able to hold off the train until police forcibly dispersed the crowd. Then, hundreds gathered at Longview to block the train from coming in. That's when police went on the offensive. They used clubs and pepper spray against the longshoremen, arresting 19. They threw ILWU President Bob McElrath to the ground. Rumors spread that police had broken his arm. Hundreds of regional longshoremen rushed to Longview. The Seattle and Tacoma ports shut down in protest. The next morning, 10,000 tons of grain were opened onto the railroad tracks. The grain export terminal was the first to be built in the Pacific Northwest in almost 30 years. EGT hoped to undercut the powerful ILWU, who controlled operations at the port since its founding in the 1930s. The union refused to agree to work 12-hour shifts at straight time. The EGT hoped to break the hiring hall by refusing to recognize maintenance and inside workers at the terminal. They then attempted to fill jobs with workers from the operating engineers. But the ILWU persevered. By the end of January, EGT had backed off many of its demands, negotiations resumed, and days later, the contract was signed.
A few days ago, the city of Savannah, Georgia, took an important symbolic step toward racial inclusiveness, naming one of Savannah's 23 historic public squares for a black woman. Susie King Taylor, born in 1848 to enslaved parents, became a renowned educator, setting up schools for emancipated children and adults, a laudable role model in America's ongoing struggle to extend equal opportunity to all. Before adding Taylor's name, though, the name that had been plastered on that square 170 years ago, John C. Calhoun, had to be subtracted. Council members did that last year, finding the South Carolina senator and two-time vice president unworthy of any public honor. Why? Well, why would Georgians of 1853 create a monument to a lawmaker from another state? Answer, slavery. No politician in our history has been a more vehement apologist and promoter of human enslavement than Calhoun. Thus, racist Southern leaders revered him. A rich son of plantation privilege, Calhoun owned dozens of slaves. More shamefully, he built his political career by fabricating a hokey economic theory asserting that slavery was such a, quote, positive good that even white workers in northern factories should be converted to slave laborers. Worst of all, Calhoun opposed the democratic ideal of majority rule, crying that it allowed the many to interfere with the freedom of the elite property class, his own, to do what they wish with their properties, including slaves. He even favored outright plutocracy, proposing that the rich should be given a special right to overturn laws they don't like. This is Jim Hightower saying, while Savannah is doing the right thing by saying no to this autocrat, beware. For the Koch brothers' network of today's plutocratic billionaires is organizing to impose his plutocratic order over us. To learn more, go to TrueNorthResearch.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So evidently, Vivek Ramaswamy and CNN are at odds. Evidently, they're locked in a dispute over... Evidently, there was supposed to be a town hall with Vivek. And evidently he was announcing it, you know, that there was going to, and evidently it wasn't. This is one of those things, one of those weird things about this guy, where he's that kind of pushy, where if you say, hey, we should do a town hall, he's already picked the date, the time, and is going to push them. And going to be interesting to see this, if he gets one. I'm going to be interested to see if he gets one. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top story of the day, our good friend Sarah Burris. She's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website, if you want to check out the work that she does. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hello, happy Thursday.
Happy day to you as well. So Vivek, do you think he gets a town hall? Do you think he goes and he does his little Trump wannabe worst kind of person impression thing there?
I think he probably does, just because he seems to be the kind of pushy dude who's like entitled and believes that he should get whatever he wants. And CNN sort of operates like they don't want to upset anybody, regardless of who they are. And so I think that he's probably going to be a squeaky wheel on this and get whatever the heck he wants.
Yeah, see, at this point, if I was at CNN, I'm like, no.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. Be like, you burned that bridge, my friend. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you're never going to be the guy anyway.
Right?
See, this is the thing. I mean, this is where politics for me has really just become reality TV, and bad reality TV. Because, you know, the model is if you've watched reality TV, and to be honest, I haven't watched a lot of it, but it's always the a-hole that you remember from every show. The person who was nice, the person who were decent, you don't remember them. They got voted out early. It's always the person who is the backstabbing, snivelly little rat that seems to get the most attention. There he is.
People have written dissertations on this, like dating back to the real world on MTV. Like the person who was like the meanest on the shows. Remember the one dude from Survivor, the bald dude that everybody hated. I mean, there's just like everybody. Omarosa is a good example.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Look at what has happened to her career, and now she's going to end up. They have a whole show now around villains that they're putting together in a reality show, and you're just like, wow, it's a reality show about reality shows. Like, that's how meta we've gone.
Oh my goodness.
That's
really the sad reality of where we are.
I feel like this is the sort of Mayan prediction of the downfall of society, the reality show about reality show. Like, somewhere there's a pyramid that has this like sketched out, and we just haven't found it yet.
No, it's weird. But here's the thing. I'm watching some of the statements going on, you know, coming out of Georgia, and it's actually, you know, the fake electors coming out of Michigan. I'm looking at all this stuff. It seems like, and maybe you're going to help me here, but it seems like Rudy Giuliani is going to be the guy who takes the fall, I think, for just about everything.
You know, I don't know, because it seems like Sidney Powell has some sketchy behavior that she's dabbled in. And because of the whole Georgia thing, you know, like that she and Ken Cheeseborough want their trials to be on the rapid response, whatever, like they're fast tracking their trials. It kind of means that this is going to be our first crack at all of this. And so, I mean, it can kind of obviously go either way, but Sidney Powell just looks really bad in a lot of these cases. And obviously she's already dealing with being disbarred. And so I don't know if it's Rudy. I don't know if it's Powell. It seems like some of them, like Jenna Ellis, are thinking about flipping. We saw this week that we got a confirmation from the special counsel, Jack Smith, that the IT guy has confirmed that he is now a cooperating witness. I mean, it's been a heck of a week, and it's been a really bad one for Donald Trump.
No, we were talking about this, my producer and I, we were talking about it, you know, yesterday a little bit, about we should start doing a flip watch, you know.
Yeah.
And start, you know, because at some point the rats are going to all jump ship, because they know that you know, one, the money is not going to be there to help them, because Trump has a history of stiffing lawyers and people that, you know, he owes money to. And two, as it looks like he may not become president, do you bet your life on a potential pardon?
Yeah, and I think that's sort of what happened with the Proud Boys. You know, they had an option to take significantly lower sentences. Like, we're talking 6 to 8 years they could have agreed to plead guilty and get that in prison. Now you got Enrique Tarrio, who's in there for 22 years. Some of them are, you know, it's from like 15 to 20 years. It's bad. And you think about, I mean, Rudy Giuliani obviously is so old, and I don't know what happens if he gets sent to Rikers Island, right? But it's one of those things where Michael Cohen and I've actually talked about this, where he's like, there are certain people that you do not throw under the bus, and your lawyer is one of them, because they know everything. And Rudy Giuliani has had a relationship with Donald Trump for a very long time, so he kind of does know everything. And Rudy has the power to basically throw Trump under the bus, and Trump doesn't want to pay his legal fees.
But, and they're gonna have a candlelight dinner.
Right. It was like family style dinner at Bedminster. And it's like, dude, you're asking your friends to give money to him. And I mean, he's racking up serious legal bills, but you're too much of a, you know, hard butt to sign off on a check to him. That just seems like, again, it's the Michael Cohen philosophy. If you never screw over your lawyer.
Yeah. No, because you're right. They know where the bodies are buried. And this is one of those weird things where it's surprising to me that Trump would give these people that much information, given the fact that he's been so, you know, secretive over the years and keeping only a select few around him. And yeah, it's a weird moment.
It is, but what is funny, like, speaking of the people that he keeps around him, some of these, you know, the IT guy who's a cooperator, there are a couple of other people that have, who had Trump-funded lawyers who have now decided that they are going to get their own lawyers, which that's kind of an indication that they're sort of looking to either make a deal or cooperate, or they're ready to throw Trump under the bus too. And I was watching an interview with, of all people, Chris Christie, and he was just like, you just know that Donald Trump is going to lay awake at night, every night, just thinking, crap, what did I say to them? What did I say to them? And it's true.
Do you think so? Do you think Trump has that kind of introspection?
I think he'll be afraid. I don't know that he'll be like, oh my God, what did I say to them? It'll be more like, oh crap, I said something stupid to them and I am screwed. Because he has no filter. And so he's said everything and done everything. And I mean, especially with the IT guy, he's the one who basically was told, you know, kill the closed circuit, the security videos. Right. So, I mean, that already is confirmation of obstruction of justice. So, I mean, they've already got him on that. So it's just, there's a lot of hurt going on with the Trump world right now.
Do you think it's going to matter, though? I mean, because, you know, I'm getting tons of responses from my red hat friends who are, you know, Trump's going to be back, and when you're going to be sorry, and this kind of, you know, whatever's going on in court doesn't matter. What's ever going on, because, you know, look, my red hat world thinks this is all just a giant witch hunt. But when you start laying out the things that he's being accused of, it's hard to deny that he actually did all these things.
No, that's the thing is if you watch these cases, and particularly with Georgia, I think it'll be a big deal because it'll be on television. They're going to walk through it just like the January 6th committee did. And what happened whenever the country was watching the January 6th hearings is it flipped the public opinion very quickly. And there's just not enough Trump supporters out there. So, you know, I really think that it's going to make a difference with folks. And again, like, his biggest problem, Donald Trump's biggest problem, is that he can't appeal to anyone other than his base.
Yeah. But what do you say to the, because I've had a number of people reach out recently and go, so, you know, here's the thing, you know, Biden and Trump are neck and neck, even with all of this horrible, you know, Trump is still way ahead of everyone else in the Republican primary. And some polling says he may actually win in the general. How's that even possible?
Yeah, that's not even possible. So a couple of the polls, like the thing with the CNN poll that was released today, they oversampled Republicans and Republican-leaning independents. And so whenever you have a pollster that's doing that, I'm asking why, and what is the goal here? And, you know, is this really just about getting a story for CNN? And, you know, the thing about national polls too, is national polls don't decide an election.
Right.
You know, it's the state polls and it's the swing state polls. And the other piece of it is Donald Trump has been campaigning since the day he left office. Joe Biden hasn't, you know, been on the campaign trail at all. He hasn't even started to fight Donald Trump yet. He hasn't even said Donald Trump's name. He's like mentioned him, the other guy or the guy before me. So I feel like, you know, the campaign, Joe Biden's campaign is just sort of starting to get off the ground. They're just starting to hire some people. They've just put out like their first ads. And, you know, if you've got the guy who is doing nothing, who is doing no campaigning at all whatsoever and just doing the governing versus the guy who's been campaigning for years and you're neck and neck, that's a problem.
Well, I see that, but I'm like, the guy's been indicted, you know, what, 91 felonies or some outrageous number like this. And then the record that he had was terrible. And I love the tweet yesterday that Joe Biden put out, said the last guy didn't build a damn thing. And there's a picture of Trump, you know, making promises. And there's Biden saying, look, it's infrastructure decade. We're creating millions of jobs. I think that's the message. I think that's what they have to hammer every single day.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's been kind of the biggest problem with the White House is that, and I think with Biden in particular, his whole history is keeping his head down and doing his job. He gets stuff done. He gets sort of caught up in the minutia with the senators. You know, he was like in on the whole negotiation thing with a bunch of, you know, the legislation. And I think that's because he likes that kind of stuff. That's, you know, shaking hands is all well and good. And he loves to, you know, get ice cream and meet people. But, you know, getting up on stage and talking about stuff, you know, is just, you know, he's going to say what he means. And I think he's sort of gun shy about that now. He didn't want to screw stuff up. And it's like, dude, just talk about what you've done, man. Like, yeah. just pimp out that stuff. Cause that's amazing. And everybody loves it.
Just go out there and be the human gaffe machine that you are.
Exactly. Like that is the thing. The whole thing about his gaffes is that it makes him so, I think, relatable. And I don't know, that always made me really think of my grandpa and like appreciate that piece of him. So, and the guy's smart. Like, here's the thing. He can talk about the bills. He can talk about legislation. He can sure as heck talk about foreign policy. Donald Trump is just going to talk about, you know,
Donald Trump,
himself and North Korea. And that's really all he's got.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is one of the, again, another one of these, you brought up North Korea. It's one of the, we're in this weird moment where you've got now Russia and North Korea and China, you know, and it's, we're in a weird kind of political global position because if Trump is reelected, I don't know which side of the divide the U.S. ends up on in the event that, Russia takes Ukraine, and do they go to, you know, Poland next? And do they get the old band back together? And then which side are we on?
I know that is a thing I think that I've heard some of the other G20 states are concerned about, that they're talking about sort of behind the scenes. And so I'm especially the fact that the G20 is going to be in India this time. It's going to be interesting to watch, you know, how things go there this time around. But you're right. Like, I don't know what it looks like. But at the same time, like, Trump is talking about jailing his opponents. So I'm like, crap, do we need to like find a country to flee to? I mean, it's unsettling.
No, but here's the thing. This is where my red hat crowd folks, you know, the threats that I get are no longer, I'm coming for you. Trump's coming and they're going to deal with people like you. There's a plan. There's the 2025 plan and the Heritage Foundation's behind it. We're bringing back patronage. We're going to be attacking, we're going to be attacking political government workers. You wait, it's going to be great.
I mean, it's hard to say, oh, that'll never happen, because we've seen what can happen. I think the big thing, the most important piece, will be what parts of Congress we keep. We've got a whole bunch of redistricting stuff going on right now, so it may very well be that the Republicans can't keep the House, which is hilarious. But we've got some Senate seats that we got to fight for this time around. So, you know, think about it. We need that Congress to be solid and reasonable. Otherwise, you know, God knows what Trump could do to us.
We're gonna take an adventure moment here, and we're gonna go to the phone lines and see who's on line one. Who we got on the line, and what's on your mind?
Hello.
Yeah, that's you. What's on your mind?
Yes, this is Steve from Chicago.
Hey, Steve.
And I think it's a really interesting. Yes, thank you for taking my call. I think it's a really interesting topic because, you know, those of us old enough to remember the Republican Party of old, remember when, you know, they fought for decades against the evils of the Iron Curtain and the Soviet Empire and how they were going to take over the world someday. And I'm just amazed, you know, I mean, Vladimir Putin came out of the KGB tradition. He was actually part of that institution. And how is it that Republicans now are just willing to look the other way? So in other words, when it was an evil communist empire, totalitarian regime, it had to be defeated at all costs. We had to fund NATO. We had to engage with them around the world, Korea, Vietnam, you name it. But now that it's not officially a communist state any longer, then totalitarian rule and aggression is just fine. I mean, I don't know how you do the intellectual gymnastics that are required to get from that to where we are now of a Republican Party that basically says, oh, Russia, you want to invade? People, go ahead. We don't care. We're not going to intervene. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. How are these the people who love Reagan and who proclaim him as Saint Reagan somehow? Ronald Reagan would be rolling over in his grave to find out that Russian aggression was being unchecked.
No, I'm right there with you. Sir, you want to jump in?
Oh, Steve is 100% correct. I think at this point in the Republican Party, Ronald Reagan would be a Democrat. That's the thing that's so
again, he'd
crazy
be back
here.
To being a Democrat?
Yeah, I think he would be because he's, you know, anti-Russia. And I mean, that's the thing that Steve's saying is that the Republican Party has changed so dramatically for anybody who was paying the slightest bit of attention through the 80s, like my parents were. Those are the Republicans who are just like, what on earth have you done? And those people are the ones that you're losing. Like those are the folks that are just like, no, I'm done with you.
Yeah, but the way I see it is the reason that, and the way it's been explained to me is the reason the Republicans are pro-Putin is he hates the same people they do. Gays, minorities, you know, the others. So, you know, in that world, you know, and he's hyper-capitalist. So at least that's what I'm told.
And if I can add this, you know, for people who are paying attention, there's been, you know, this sort of downturn in terms of how we look at the Soviet Union. I'm sorry, in the car here. We look at the Soviet Union, and there's been also revisionism with regard to the Nazis and Adolf Hitler and so forth. All of a sudden, they're not quite as bad as we framed it. Mm-hmm. You know, go figure that sort of thing is on the ascendancy, because 30 years ago, if you would have said it, you'd have been laughed out of a classroom or you would have been ridiculed. We fought the Nazis for a reason. Your grandparents died there, you know, fighting them. We fought two wars in the 20th century, you know, and to save Europe. And then this idea that now, oh, well, you know, the Nazis were misunderstood. And really, you know, we need to shift the blame as to who we really hate, because it's China and other places. And, you know, and Vladimir Putin and Russia, they aren't really that bad.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I appreciate the call, Steve. Thanks so much. Good stuff.
Thank you.
No, I mean, this is one of those weird moments. And I've been talking about this for a while because, you know, I grew up during the 80s. I remember mutual assured destruction. I remember we were at odds. And to see that the party of Reagan, to see the Republicans doing what they're doing right now is kind of frightening. And I go back to what I said, and I stand by it. I don't know what side. If Trump is in the Oval Office, I don't know what side of a war in Europe we take.
You know, I don't know either. The thing that Steve was pointing out is it really has become, and you were saying with the Republican Party, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. You know, the people who are against the gays, against, you know, all of these different groups, those are my friends now. And we've seen how that movie plays out in other countries, and it really does not work well long term.
Yeah.
So you know, again, for a lot of countries that have been out there for more than 250 years, they have kind of a broader perspective on things. And I just don't know why. I don't know why Republicans have decided that they are willing to compromise that piece of themselves, particularly Republicans in the Senate. Like, that's the thing that blows my mind, is it's like, you people know better because you were around during World War II. You're 900 years old. Like, Chuck Grassley, for real, Chuck Grassley is like 100 years old or something, right? Like, I mean, he's older than Mitch McConnell at this point. So,
no, I mean, Grassley's a perfect example. I mean, you know, the fact that, you know, and I talked about it before you came on, the fact that he said, you know, Mike Pence might not be there. I'm going to preside over the Senate and all of this stuff, because I want to know what he meant by that. Now he's saying it wasn't, he was misrepresented and all that nonsense. I think there was much more to this, but we will find out. Last, I got to get your thoughts on this before I let you go. We saw the first Republican presidential debate. Trump was a no-show, of which, I got to be honest, if I was advising Trump, I would have told him to stay away from all of these debates. Don't bother. I wouldn't go anywhere near them. I wouldn't give them any credibility whatsoever, because they're all the child's table, so to speak, you know, the frame from the last debate. But Trump wants to debate Meghan Markle.
So this is the craziest story. He's interviewing Hugh Hewitt, and there's like this whole thing about, you know, Gavin Newsom and Ron DeSantis debating each other, because basically Gavin Newsom has just been needling the dude for years now. And so Hewitt was just like, well, what about you? Like, who do you want to debate? Like, what about Meghan and Harry? Do you think that'd be a good ratings grabber? And it's like, really? Like, this is how far we've gone now. We've gone all the way to British tabloid level with this race. Like, that's how bad this campaign is. Can we not please just be a normal, have like a normal political conversation with people? No. Or does it have to be sensationalized? Yes. Reality TV?
No, and on that side of the aisle, yeah. Because here's the thing, here's the reality, and this is what I've been saying for the longest time: Republicans don't have any ideas. So if you have no ideas, if you have no policy aims, if you have no way of selling yourself as a functional party with actual governing principles, you've got to make a sideshow. You've got to be the circus. You've got to be the bread and circus that they are. And so not surprising, not surprising at all.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. And this is where we are now. I think what would be interesting to me is if Trump is going to be brave enough to debate Joe Biden.
No, I want him to debate Meghan Markle. Where's she at? I now gotta see this.
I want to get in here both to it, because I think, you know, Meghan is too nice. I think Harry just like flattens him with his sweet smile and British accent.
I saw that yesterday.
I have a thing for the gingers.
Okay, well, you know, we've all got our thing. I do want to give you the last bit, because before we went on, you said that you saw the perfect headline. so I'm going to give you the chance to read the headline.
Dude, I wrote the best headline of all time. It's a story about the chairman of the Georgia Republican Party, the former chairman, is mad about the mail that he's getting in his mailbox. And so my headline was, Trump co-defendant demands special prosecutor be removed for, quote, inappropriate mail contact. He got mail he didn't like.
I see what you did there. Are you sure it wasn't Matt Schlapp you were talking about?
You know, you never know at this point with the Schlappy.
Again, we're in such a spot, such a weird spot. And again, you know, the thing is, still not talking about how we're going to make people's lives better, because they don't have any.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.